Hi, welcome to the Lifelike Orange podcast. I'm Ichabod Broccoli, and today I wanted to reflect on some of the things that we've talked about in our previous episodes. So I guess let's just jump right into it. Our last episode was, we had the guest, Monroe Coutant on here, and he shared some information with us about his new album and played a song for us. And he also asked me some questions about my previous episode, in which I talked about stand-up comedy. And he tried to get me to be funny. And as you know, if you listen to any stand-up comedians talk about it, you don't just say, be funny, and then they'll spontaneously bust out being funny. You have to kind of set it up. You need the right, right environment and the right mindset for people. And plus, I'm not a comedian, and so when I did try to come up with something amusing, all I had was one callback to a previous episode. And if you didn't know, if you hadn't heard that other episode, it would make no sense. But I went back and I listened to it, and some people have told me that when I am trying to be funny, I remind them a little bit of Seth Rogen in the way that I talk. Maybe it's because we're both from California or something. I don't know. Is he from California? But there's something about my mannerisms and the way I talk that remind them of Seth Rogen, which is fine because I like him. I think he's funny. Take these cans off. I also got some flack about a comment I made about how I don't like Lucille Ball as a comedian. I don't like her, and I don't have extensive experience watching or hearing her do stand-up. I don't even know if she did stand-up, but as a comedian on her TV show, that's most of the experience I've had, whether it was the I Love Lucy or the Lucy Show or any of the other appearances she made on TV. I don't know. I don't find her to be that funny. She tends to, well, at least on her shows, on her original show, where I've seen her the most, she just got that kind of frantic thing. And something about those people who just are so frantic, it's not entertaining. I like the people who are more laid back. Like I had mentioned, Mike Kaplan in particular, and he just got this way, right? Well, you know, he just tell you something, and this, you know, that's not how it is, and it's matter of fact, and I think that's a lot more my speed. I like his style. I mean, there are a lot of other people that I could mention. There are a lot of other stand-up specials that I watched that I didn't mention. I only mentioned a few. And I did mention Bill Cosby, which I understand is a bit of a controversial reference, which I'm fine with. I'm not trying to not be controversial. And But I am, for some reason, trying to play the piano. So I've been, access to this keyboard. Mic stand is in the way, so I can't really get to it. Yeah, that's what I'm going with. Okay, enough of that. So I'm taking a speech class. I don't know if it's gonna help me here at all, but I'm having to do things like write and give speeches. Weird. And the first speech I gave, it was called a they call it a cultural artifact speech. And I had to come up with all the elements of the speech, the introduction, the attention getter, the thesis, the main points. I don't know if you've ever had a speech class and you know what I'm talking about. I am not good at writing a thesis. I'm also not good at being persuasive, it turns out. I don't feel that strongly about things, to be honest. And so persuading people to see things my way is not even something that's really in my wheelhouse. I tend to be like, well, this is what I think, and I understand if you think differently. I even understand your point of view, and I don't hold it against you. I'm certainly not trying to change it. I'm not trying to change people's minds. On things that would matter, like, I don't know, you know, I have opinions about gun control and things like that, abortion, you know, but my teacher had mentioned, you might not want to write a persuasive speech about those things, because those are things that people know how they feel about them, and they tend to dig in their heels and argue for their point of view. Nobody's going to be persuaded by a 6-minute speech trying to tell them, go ahead and kill unborn babies. It's fine. It's not going to be very effective. So I am kind of struggling with this class. I took an English 100 class, and I had to write a it wasn't a speech, it was more of an essay, but it had to have a thesis and all this stuff, and it was supposed to be persuasive, and the teacher said that I didn't get the point of it. I didn't properly do the assignment. I wasn't persuasive, or I didn't try to. I don't know what it was that I did wrong. I sent that essay to my new teacher, and I said, she said I didn't get it, and I don't know what I needed to do, or what I didn't do, or what whatever. And he said he would take a look. I found out later he just wanted to read the thesis, but I sent him the whole paper. Nothing back yet, but that's okay. This is a guy who tells everybody in the class, your post cannot have any spelling or grammar errors, and he puts it in all caps and bold and everything to emphasize no spelling errors or grammar errors. And this guy, I mean, he's not as bad as the students, but he doesn't know how to use an apostrophe. He doesn't get the whole difference between the possessive and plural, and he puts apostrophes where they don't go, and that's a peeve of mine. He says, on the ones that are, you know, in ones has an apostrophe S. What? So things like that. It makes me question his knowledge in general, and speech is not that far from English class. We're doing the same assignments. You're writing essays that are going to be speeches, and you're being told not to make errors by somebody who makes errors. I don't know how to handle that. My wife tells me I can't correct him outright. Just say, hey, you know, you want us to not make mistakes, and you make mistakes in telling us that we can't make mistakes? Okay, so technically you didn't say that you can't make mistakes. So there's a double standard. No problem. Okay, as long as I get that. Just need to know up front, there's a huge double standard here. You're going to be held to a higher standard than I am. I'm only the teacher. You're the ones who are supposed to be learning and getting better. Yeah, I get that. So it's more important that we get things right than he get things right. It just feels like cars for kids, you know, K-A-R-S, cars for, this is supposedly for kids, and you're gonna encourage incorrect spellings of common words? I don't think that there's that much of an advantage to misspelling it. I used to always think that about Toys R Us, too. Toys R Us. It's where kids go. It's where kids are supposed to go. It's where they wanted kids to go, you know, when they were still in business. And yet, they're going to confuse kids about which direction the capital R goes and the grammar. Toys R Us? Not that Toys R We makes much sense either, but we are toys. Us are toys. Things like that. I need to get over them. But I don't. So I keep thinking about this whole stand-up comedy thing, and I would like to try to do that. But the problem is, like I said, in the style that I would do it, I would need to work off of the audience, and that's not something that you can practice when you're by yourself. I saw an episode of Saturday Night Live tonight, and there was a thing about a man park. It was a play on like a dog park, but men don't know how to make friends, and when they're married or in a close relationship, then their partner is like the one person that they do all their talking to. And it's really upsetting and taxing for these women to be the ones who have to hear everything the guy wants to say. It's a parody show, so it's a parody, it's a joke, it's not meant to be taken seriously, obviously. But I really feel that because I don't have close friends, and I keep thinking about that. I want to interview some people, or, you know, have guests here on my podcast, or someone I can try and do a comedy routine with or something, and I just don't have people in my life that I talk to every day that I could be like, hey, tomorrow, why don't we do this thing? So I don't have anyone in my life who makes time in their day to talk to me. So if I call them up and say, hey, can you talk? I'm not on the schedule. I'm not slated to take any of their time. So I can't be surprised when they don't have any time. If someone calls me and says, hey, can we talk? There's a good chance I'm going to be doing something or planning to do something, scheduled for something. Well, I'm going to have to go. I can talk for 5 minutes, but then we're going to do this thing or that thing. It's understandable. Grown-ups with responsibilities and lives and things, they have to do things. They can't just sit around and take calls from their friends whenever they happen, like we were teenagers or something. And normally it doesn't bother me. I don't mind. I mean, I don't miss my friends per se. It's not like I sit around going, man, I wish I talked to them still. I mean, if I do talk to them, I a lot of times would be like, oh man, I miss this. In the moment, I recognize it's like, it's fun talking to my friends, and I don't really do that anymore. And I can be aware of it when I'm doing it. But I don't sit around pining for it. I don't just sit around sad that my friends don't call me. That would be kind of pathetic. And I could call them if it was that big of a thing. And if this whole, like, being in a habit of talking to them would change things, well, I could just call them regularly and make it a habit. And then they probably would be more likely to make the time for me, because it would be expected. But right now, I'd just be calling them out of the blue without any warning. Hey, can you talk? Can I run a few jokes by you? Oh, but first, give me something to riff off of so that I can be funny. I don't really know how that works. And again, just trying to be funny on command. I don't know. Maybe if I still smoked pot. Well. So. Going back to this speech thing. Our new assignment is going to be a persuasive speech, like I said. And I've chosen the topic of helping to save the environment by buying electric cars. It's not a debate, but it's supposed to be like one side of a debate. I'm supposed to be making an argument and defending my argument. And I know that there are problems with the production of electric cars, and there are things that are harming the environment, but to be honest, we humans, we harm the environment every day in everything we do. We are bad for this planet. We are like a cancer on this planet. There's nothing good about us. I mean, we can landscape and make a pretty park or something, but it's nothing that nature can't do on its own. We just have to do those things to try to restore some of the natural beauty from what we've taken away by paving it and putting up buildings and things. So there's nothing that we do that's going to be better for the Earth than if we weren't here. So we can't have these altruistic sort of goals where it's like, all right, we can just do the perfect thing to harmonize with the Earth. No, everything we do hurts it in some way. And we just have to accept that. But our carbon emissions, and more importantly, the oil industry, the fossil fuel industry, we need to sweep the legs out from under them. We need to devalue their product so that they lose their power and can no longer control our government and, you know, fix prices and make poor people poorer and destroy the environment with their leaks and their fracking. And it's a three-pronged plan, really, that I have. And one of the things is getting people to plan to buy an electric car for their next car. Another thing is if we drive electric cars, we'll drive down the value of oil-based petroleum, reducing the need for environmentally damaging extraction and transportation of fossil fuels. And we'll be greatly reducing our carbon emissions, contributing to the greenhouse effect that is raising our global temperature and causing the ice caps to melt and so forth. The way I worded it, the problems are climate change as exacerbated by gas-fueled cars, the overreaching influence and control of the oil industry, and the harm done to our environment from drilling and mining fossil fuels. So that's going to be a fun one. So I'm going to keep working on that, my speeches and my comedy. Not that I have a routine, but keep working on figuring out how I would go about entertaining a crowd. I guess I would need some jokes that were I keep struggling to come up with this word, predetermined, written ahead of time, not prescribed, obviously, I don't know, I can't think of the word, premeditated, and I'm gonna keep working on trying to get some more guests over here. I tested a method where I could record a guest over a Zoom call. So hopefully, you know, I can get some remote guests, because getting them in here and getting a separate mic, it's kind of a logistical nightmare. So we'll see what happens down the road. Until then, thanks for slowing for the cone zone, and go ahead and check out some best policy music, see if there's something you would like to download and help support us, and yeah, thanks for listening. Ick out.